Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, here and there around this big country of ours, there are pockets of people who have kept a cultural identity that came with them from elsewhere. Some are in cities like Chinatown in San Francisco or the Cubans in South Florida. And some are out in the country like the Amish and Mennonites in Pennsylvania and the Ohio Valley. Now, some of them are a lot lesser known, like the Hmong people from Laos who settled after the Vietnam War in California and Minnesota in little pockets of those groups of people. And until well after World War II, there were actually areas of eastern Missouri, several counties really, where English was the second language, and descendants of German and Austrian immigrants mainly spoke German there. Some of these people immigrated voluntarily, and others came as refugees from wars and political persecution and so on. But one of the largest and best known of these groups are the Cajun people of southern Louisiana, who we've all heard of. The rest of America knows about them mainly through, you know, Cajun cooking and spices and Mardi Gras, New Orleans, and a few phrases like laissez le bon temps rouler, you know, which is let the good times roll. And most Cajuns do speak some French along with English. In fact, you know, out in the country, I guess a lot of Cajun people primarily speak French. They're a people with an unusually rich culture, and a strong sense of a shared identity, and a style of music all their own, and a fascinating history. So I have two guests with me today who are joining us from South Louisiana, who are both very well known in Cajun country and who are going to share all of that with us today. Zachary Richard is a singer-songwriter who's been recording and performing all across the United States, Canada, and Europe since the 1970s, playing venues large and small, from outdoor events in Quebec to concert halls in Paris to honky-tonk venues in South Louisiana. In addition to being a songwriter and a performer, Zachary is also a documentary filmmaker, a poet, and an author, whose most recent book is a children's book, The Legend of Little Red. He has homes in South Louisiana and Montreal and Paris. My second guest is Todd Mouton. He's a young guy who, like Zachary, descends from a long line of Cajuns. One of Todd's ancestors was actually the leader of the band of Acadians who first settled in what is now Lafayette, Louisiana. Todd's a prolific music producer and event promoter who puts on dozens of Cajun and Creole musical events a year. Recently, the University of Louisiana published Todd's first book called Way Down in Louisiana, which is a great and in-depth overview of the musical history of the region, focusing on some famous Cajun musicians and styles such as Zydeco music that we'll hear about. Along with their professional pursuits, Zachary and Todd are also ardent cultural activists who work hard to preserve the unique culture I've been talking about and the traditions of this special place and its people, the Cajuns. So both of them are joining us today from their homes near Lafayette, Louisiana. Welcome, guys.
Hello. Bonjour.
Bonjour to you. Nice to have you on. Zachary, let's start with you. Can you give us a thumbnail version, and a kind of a short version, because it's a short show and we got a lot to talk about, but of who the Acadians or the Cajuns are and how they got there?
Well, I was interested by your comment, Court, about groups which have brought things from elsewhere. Our ancestors, Todd and I ancestors, were deported from what is today Nova Scotia in the largest ethnic cleansing practiced on people of European descent in the history of North America. And the Acadian exiles found their way to Louisiana 250 years ago this year, actually. But what is interesting is not so much what the Acadians brought with them, but what happened to them when they got to Louisiana, because we have been part of a cultural matrix which is extremely varied and very complex. And Cajun society, although it was based on an Acadian root, began to assimilate influences of German, Spanish, Irish, North American, Indian, and African influences to create a culture that probably would be better described as Creole in the classical sense, meaning a mixture of different cultures. Cajun is the descendants of the exiled Acadians on the one hand, but it's also the evolution of a very distinctive but very difficult to define ethnic culture, which is located in the southwest of Louisiana today. So I hope that was not too confusing as a thumbnail.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you described the Creoles, because a lot of people are, if they've even heard of Creole, you know, the Cajun term is better known, more familiar throughout North America, but the Creole culture is kind of interlaced with it right down in South Louisiana and maybe more associated with New Orleans. So I'm glad you described that, because a lot of people don't know that distinction. But, you know, let me ask Zachary, how much of the French and Acadian culture still remains in French Louisiana today? Is it still a strong cultural identity, or is it just more like a flavor that's used for commercial purposes like Mardi Gras or something in between?
Our topography is defined by an underground aquifer. We live on what's called the Acadian, settled on the Attakapau Prairie. So southwest Louisiana, basically from the Mississippi River west, is a table, and under which there is an underground river. And Acadian culture in Louisiana is, that's a great metaphor for me, because it's there, it's omnipresent, but you can't really see it. The language has suffered significant problems of assimilation, but there is nonetheless a very ferocious attachment to the culture itself by the younger generations, the music, the food, and I would say a lifestyle as well. And so there is a really very, very strong identity marker, which is territorial on the one hand, but it's also ethnic and lifestyle oriented. So even though the language has suffered significantly over the last 100 years, the notion of cultural identity is very, very strong.
Yeah, I like that metaphor of an underground river too. Is this cultural identity strongest out in the rural parts, you know, the small towns along the bayous and so on, than it is more in the cities like Lafayette and Baton Rouge and New Orleans?
That's a real complex question, Court, because there is, if you're talking about the French language itself, the more that you're isolated in the country, the more likely you are to find people that still speak French on a daily basis. But the salvation of French in Louisiana, and there's an evolution of another identity, which is very interesting to me as a Francophone, the notion of Louisiana French speaker, as opposed to specifically ethnic Cajun or Black Creole or other. And that is because of French immersion education, which has been going on since the 1960s. 1968 was the first program. And French immersion education in Louisiana is based on the Canadian model. The kids basically spend their school day in French, and by the time they get to third grade, they're perfectly fluent and bilingual. But that is not necessarily attached to any ethnic culture, but to the larger French-speaking world. So that's the evolution of a very interesting and relatively new identity in Louisiana. But what's interesting is that people, whether they're Cajun or Black Creole or immigrants to southwest Louisiana, all have a specific relationship to their Acadian or Cajun identity. And I would be interested to see what Todd thinks about this, because Todd is one of the, what we refer to as the lost generation, as much as his French probably is not as good as he would like it to be. But nonetheless, I think Todd would consider himself to be a Cajun. So the evolution of identity in South Louisiana is something that's very, very complex. And yeah, you're right. We're not going to have time to hit all the talking points in a half hour. But if you want to find out about it, you should buy Todd's book.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get to that. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We are talking with two guys from South Louisiana, Todd Mouton, who's a music promoter and producer and an author as well, and Zachary Richard, who is a singer-songwriter and performer who's been performing around French Canada and several countries in Europe and around the U.S. for many years, as I think 20 albums out. We're going to hear some music a little later on. Well, Todd, let me just start by asking you for a quick answer to the question that Zachary posed to you. Do you consider yourself a Cajun?
Oh, absolutely. And I think I heard a great thing the other day. Someone said that they were told once that identity was sort of like a pocket full of change, and you sort of pull out the different coins you need at the different times for the different reasons, different purposes. And I think that Louisiana is a place where you kind of don't really even have to choose one identity. There are so many different kind of cultural currents, and kind of the deeper you get into it, you know, whether you're researching the roots of things or the current scene and what people are doing, it's kind of this ongoing hybridization. But I think there is a sort of a fundamental kind of a core outlook. I think Zachary was sort of saying something about a way of life, you know, an approach to a lifestyle. And we're really lucky because there's all these culture markers where you can play the music, you can eat the food, you can dance the dances, you can speak the language. And if you're doing all those things, I think you're going to, and you're liking all those things, I think you're going to definitely claim that as a very important part of your identity.
Yeah, just quickly, I think gumbo and jambalaya are good metaphors for that whole area, because as you both said, it's such a jumble of different cultures that are all rich and create an even richer stew when you put them all together. Well, Todd, let's talk about your book, Way Down in Louisiana. The subtitle is Clifton Chenier, Cajun, Zydeco, and Swamp Pop Music. That's a mouthful. And as it implies, the book looks at some of the leading people in those styles of music and also the musical styles themselves. For example, I had never heard of Zydeco or of Clifton Chenier, but they're central to understanding this genre or all these genres. So let's start in, I guess, with what's Zydeco, Todd, and who was Clifton Chenier?
Well, you know, those are great questions. You know, Zydeco is, it's a noun, it's a verb, it's a term that is a sort of a phonetic rewriting of a lyric. So like a lot of things down here, it's real rich in meaning. But Clifton is really a central figure in my book because he's a huge presence down here. And he was an artist that, you know, recorded and toured for about 33 years from about 1954 to 1987. And although the book doesn't overtly sort of say this is about, you know, everything that sort of came before and came after, and he was sort of this portal through which this culture was sort of redefined, Clifton was a figure like Muddy Waters or Bob Marley or Robert Johnson. He somehow really tapped into some really amazing things about this music and added a lot of other things that were happening, particularly in the 1950s and 60s with R&B. So Zydeco is typically the music of the Black Creoles of South Louisiana. It's typically got an accordion and a rub board. It's typically got some electrified instruments too, like bass and guitar, drums, saxophone. You know, it's known to a lot of people around the world as a real sort of kind of a boogie sound. And Clifton was really the guy who sort of crystallized Zydeco as we know it today through his recordings in the 60s and 70s. And he also toured the world. So a lot of the recognition and awareness of Zydeco is due to him. And then, of course, as the book kind of gets into, all these other figures who have intersected his path, who have, you know, interacted with his legacy and his influences as well.
One part of your subtitle is Swamp Pop. Just quickly, what is, I mean, we all know what pop is, but, and I guess we know what a swamp is, but when you put them together, what's Swamp Pop?
There's this sax player named Harry Simino, and he said it's one half domino and it's one half fado dough. And that's a cute little explanation, but, you know, Swamp Pop is this sort of a blue-eyed soul, this Cajun and Creole rhythm and blues and rock and roll that arose basically in the 50s and 60s. It was sort of this answer to the British invasion. And it still goes on. And again, as time goes on, the term Swamp Pop, I think, can apply to sort of anything, Cajun, Zydeco, Creole, rootsy, that comes out of here that kind of crosses over. So Swamp Pop, in my opinion, could be anything from Don't Mess With My Toot Toot to, you know, some of Clifton Chenier's covers of Ray Charles.
Okay, so speaking of Clifton Chenier, why don't we play Clifton Chenier, and this is doing the old Beatles classic Money, and he's at the Montreux Jazz Festival in Switzerland in 1975. So that's the king of Zydeco, Clifton Chenier. Todd, in your book, there's a guitarist, Sonny Landreth, who's from down your way, too. And he reminds me of Dickie Betts, a famous guitarist of the Allman Brothers. And there's also a chapter on a guy named Zachary Richard, who's put out, as I said, about 20 albums and done as much as anybody to keep Cajun theme music alive. Apart from those two, one of whom is our guest today, who are some of the other biggest people and bands in these genres, Todd?
Well, you know, it's a long list. And in putting the book together, I never get to see Clifton play live. And so, you know, there's some amazing connections. You mentioned Sonny Landreth. He, of course, was part of Zachary's band at one point. He's got a career of his own. He was part of Clifton's band at one point. And, you know, I had to ask folks like Zachary to explain to me and tell me about Clifton and what he was like. And so in putting the book together, I tried to focus on the intersections between all these different artists. So there, Little Buck Senegal is another guitar player. We just heard him playing on that track from Switzerland. There's a chapter on him. He played with Clifton. He has his own career. A Little Band of Gold, a swamp pop group. Bonsoir Catan is a current Grammy-nominated, mostly female Cajun group that is pretty adventurous in their songwriting. Roddy Romero and the Hub City All-Stars. You've got a couple members of the band with Spanish names, Romero and Viator. They bring a sort of their own angle to the culture. Beausoleil, Michael Duse, Filé, Buckwheat Zydeco. And the book was really, you know, I tried to kind of take a core out of the apple, so to speak. There's a lot more apples. There's a tree, there's an orchard, there's a lot more to explore in this music and culture, but I try to focus on about a dozen of you know, sort of the leading lights who are mostly pretty interconnected, and that's really the strength of all this culture.
Zachary, I know you record in both French and English, and you work across the different regional and traditional genres we've been talking about, and you've been very successful in Canada and Europe and, of course, in French Louisiana, but I get the impression that this kind of music has a harder time of it in the broader American market. Is there a big barrier between this kind of regional music, and particularly when it's not in English, and mainstream American pop? I mean, you know, is it a tough row to hoe to get across that gap?
Well, Court, I'm first and foremost a songwriter.
Yeah.
And the fusion of culture is very lingual-centric. I've recorded in both English and French, and in fact, I had about a 15-year career, which ended when I returned to French Canada in the mid-90s, but touring the United States and basically living on a tour bus. The notion of communication as a songwriter is limited by language. Language is not only a means of communication, but it's also a way that you see the world. And American culture is, for better or for worse, very Anglo-centric. And when I was singing in English, I was able to tour the country. And when I sang in French, I was basically eliminating that part of the world from the possibilities of touring. And I've always been kind of the black sheep of the family, too, in the sense that I've never really, even though I'm nourished by the tradition and feel very strongly about the tradition, I've never respected the barriers of the tradition. I'm a songwriter in the American folk tradition more than anything else from a musicological standpoint. And what's important to me is to communicate through my songs the emotions which inspire the songs, irrelevant of any particular musical style. But nonetheless, I still am very, and I guess maybe that's a contradiction in terms, but that's what makes South Louisiana so complex and maybe so difficult to understand, is that there are so many different tributaries in the Big River that it's sometimes really difficult to separate the different currents and to understand where all of this stuff came from. So that's why we have people like Todd Mouton to explain it to us.
Yeah, I mean, another way to look at it is, I mean, look how many Hispanic people there are in the U.S. now. You know, a large percentage of the population, and yet there are so few songs that are in Spanish that make it onto the charts, you know. And so it's a real example of the linguocentric side of music that you're talking about. I mentioned slide guitarist Sonny Landreth. Why don't we play one of the songs off your next-to-last album, I think it was, Zachary, with Sonny playing acoustic guitar. This one's called Cliff's Zydeco. Dans mon rêve
J'ai vu Clifton Chenier vivant comme le vieux Lazare. Il semblait si beau comme un beau soleil brillant dans le ciel au-dessus de l'Égypte. Avec le don en or et le galet noir, le sous ton soin et les bagues sous les doigts, bousou l'arrière, du petit à l'avant, au Jack à côté de Joe Mouton, emmené en haut, au second pas, et à côté, Queen Aida.
And you hear the squeeze box, the accordion at the end there, that's part of the style of music of Zydeco. That was a very catchy song, Zachary, and obviously that was Zachary Richard singing. Both the sound engineer and I were bouncing both our knees around. It was cool, but you know, again, it's not something I had heard, and yet if it were in English, I suspect I would have heard it a lot. You know, keeping up on that same theme, I know you've recorded Zachary several albums in English. Have those songs been very popular with your French-speaking audience? I guess what I'm asking is that a two-way barrier where that linguocentric, or however you say it, thing you're talking about works both ways, where it's hard for a song to cross the linguistic barrier?
I think that's true. You know, people want to understand. And, you know, if you could take a pill and understand another language, then I think that everybody would be multilingual. Hmm. Unfortunately, that's not the way that things work. Songwriting and the nature of songwriting is based on the emotions that can be conveyed or the feelings that can be conveyed through a variety of ingredients, which include obviously rhythm and melody, but also very importantly, lyric. And so you naturally want to understand what's being said. So I think that there is, you know, cultural barriers, and it's inevitable. And it's something that I've been dealing with my whole professional life. But that's just the way things are. You know, I mean, I don't bemoan it. I just try to take advantage of it. And sometimes I'm on one side of the fence and sometimes I'm on the other. But I do, regardless of where I'm playing and what is the dominant language in that particular locality, I always insist upon singing in both languages at one time just to celebrate the diversity of our own culture. And I think that, like, as you were knocking your knees to Cliff Zydeco, there are elements of music which music is the universal language. So there are elements which transcend the language barrier. But I think for a songwriter, it's really very important to be understood. So, you know, I just deal with it. And I feel that it's really more of a saving grace in my case to be able to use two languages. There was a very important French Creole poet from Martinique whose name was Aimé Césaire. And he talked about his two languages, that being Creole and French, as his two hands. And he said to cut off one of his languages would be like to cut off one of his hands. And I've always really loved that metaphor.
Yeah, it's a good metaphor. What's great is that you've been able to do what you love and to do it very well and to have a good life doing it around the world. So, you know, kudos to you, because you not only do what you love and make a lot of people happy with a lot of music in two different languages, but you also are trying to bridge that gap every time you do it and everywhere you go. Todd, there was a music producer and promoter in San Francisco in the 60s named Bill Graham, who basically got psychedelic rock going with groups like the Jefferson Airplane and the Grateful Dead and Janis Joplin. And you're such a prolific promoter down your way that you've been called the Bill Graham of South Louisiana. Do you push up against this wall a lot that we've been talking about? Are your audiences broader than kind of the local South Louisiana population?
It's an interesting thing. We are a place, we're really blessed, and I know we've been talking about a lot of these, kind of the complexities of the culture, and you know, the fact of the matter is we really are overflowing with food and music and dancing, and we are all working to understand it better. And so a lot of times when I produce events, there's sort of a conversational component where we either interview the artist, we ask Zachary some questions, the audience asks Zachary some questions, stuff like that. You know, really, if you get people talking about it, that's probably the best thing you can do. You know, you increase understanding, you increase connection, and So when, you know, when we're doing shows down here, we try to do more than just, oh, this is a band playing right now. You know, let's record it, let's broadcast it, let's make it available. You know, and so as a promoter, on the one hand, it's not a huge live music market down here because there's so much everywhere. In fact, Lafayette is often called the free music capital of the world. We have all these free music series. But you know, I think that we're lucky to have all these great artists that we can find new ways to sort of present and showcase. And I think that does seep out and translate out beyond the borders of the state.
Yeah, I mentioned that you both work to keep Acadian culture alive. And Todd, your book is obviously one way to do that. And it sounds like your event promoting is and your concerts are another way to do it, because it sounds like you strategize how they're put together partly with a view to expanding the reach of this music that you love so much, right? So how about you, Zachary? What are some of the things you do as a Cajun and Creole cultural activist to expand the reach of your region's music and culture?
I've been very involved, Court, in the last few years with French immersion programs. As I said, there are public schools in Louisiana. French immersion education is something that is more and more important because it's not only a great way to preserve the culture, but really a tremendous teaching tool. The kids who are all from Anglophone households are confronted with what is essentially a foreign language in kindergarten, but by the third grade, they're completely bilingual. What that will have as an impact on cultural identity is something that I can't really imagine. We've produced an album of songs which are co-written by the kids. I was just in New Iberia, Louisiana, a couple of weeks ago. We're in the process of creating another project around a song that was written with French immersion kids in the fifth grade, where we will record the song that I wrote with them and then hopefully have a video to celebrate that. There's a lot of things that are very encouraging. It's very difficult from the linguistic standpoint because the steamroller of American mass culture has kind of rolled over Louisiana a long time ago. My grandfather was monolingual French speaking. My grandparents could not speak English. He was monolingual French speaking. And it's more and more difficult to find French speakers in Louisiana. But like my neighbor and cultural activist, Barry Onsley, says whenever they're about to close the lid on the coffin of Cajun culture in Louisiana, the corpse sits up and asks for a beer.
That's a good way to put it. So I think for myself, looking at it from the outside, that there's no problem that Cajun culture will continue to survive and thrive because it is so colorful and so appealing and so rich. You know, it's a part of America that's, even though, you know, it's kind of hidden in some ways down in South Louisiana, it's very visible also in many other ways. So to keep it being visible and learn more about Zachary Richard and his music, you can go to his website. It's spelled, the last name is like Richard, Zachary, RICHARD.com. And to buy Todd's book, see his event schedule and go to waydowninlouisiana.com, waydowninlouisiana.com, all one word. I really recommend the book. It's really well done. It's kind of the history of this kind of music we've been talking about. And if you want to get deeper into this fascinating musical world written by someone who's been immersed in Cajun life and music for his whole life, it's a good way to do it. It's full of pictures and great inside baseball anecdotes about the artists. Todd Mouton and Zachary Richard, thank you so much for being on with us on American Variety.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup. Mon plaisir.
Et merci à vous aussi. Thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.